You're listening to podcasts from the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee, www.netcaucus.org.
Hello, folks. This last panel, we sprinkled in a little bit of alliteration in the title. It's called Megabyte by the Morsel and Data by the Dollop. How will new mobile data plans affect consumers' innovation in the mobile marketplace? The premise, we were piqued, we were interested by the fact that when the iPad, it's not technically called the iPad 3, but the iPad 3, for lack of a better term, came out, there were a lot of discussions about how the 4G LTE enabled device could theoretically burn through a user's data cap within hours, which was really interesting to us. And the idea that mobile data plans seem to be inevitably moving towards kind of more dynamic pricing really is really interesting to just generally everybody in the country. There are what I call the happy grandfathers. I talk to people all the time, so I'm grandfathered in under the data plan for Verizon or AT&T, and people, I've never seen people so excited about being a grandfather. So that's really interesting. This panel is not looking at like the negative side exclusively of these data plans. We really think it's kind of dynamic pricing. Several years ago when the Amazon Kindle came out, one of the devices actually came with prepaid data. You could download as many books as you wanted, and it's easier to relate for people. They didn't have to sign up for a plan. They didn't have to sign up for commit to 2 years of an extra price. Really interesting, maybe one of the reasons why the Kindleization was very successful. Overseas, we're seeing other dynamic pricing models where you would actually pay for devices that only did two things, like access Facebook and Twitter. That's all the device does, and you pay for it. Basically, you're paying for the app and for the device, and the data is included. I'm on the impression AT&T is experimenting with similar plans where the app would be preloaded with data. It would not count against your data plan. Those are all really, really interesting to us. So we put together a really, really excellent all-star panel here. And if we have still a little time, I want to just go through the introductions very quickly. In their bios or on the website. So I think we're going to do it in this order. Mary Brown, the brand is with Cisco Systems, has been with Cisco since, I think, 2004. Mary does a lot of their telecommunications work, and you all know Cisco. Roger Ender, right here, he used to be with Nielsen, now he's with Recon Analytics. Roger just released a report, I think, yesterday, the day before, on mobile data. Then we're going to go to Blair LeBan, who's the Communications and Society Fellow at the Aspen Institute Communications and Society Program. Blair was one of the principal authors of the National Broadband Plans for the Broadband Communications Commission. And then Larry Baggett, syndicated columnist and journalist for CBS News. Larry writes for New York Times, LA Times, everybody in between. He's a regular contributor to CNET and others. Also does a lot of family technology work. And then Scott Walston, who is the Vice President for Research and Senior Fellow at the Technology Policy Institute. Scott is with TPI, but more recently was with the Federal Communications Commission. And then we have Michael Weinberg, who's the Senior Staff Attorney for Public Knowledge. Michael's been working a lot on these data plan issues and some of those for public knowledge. So let me get right to it. We have a lot of folks, we have a lot of expert shows. I want to just dispense with the opening statements very, very quickly. In 3 minutes, and then we can get into kind of a moderated discussion about what we're going to talk about. A lot of different issues here, so let's get right to it. I'm going to start off with Mary, then go to Roger, and then in that order that I described.
Button. Now it says speak. Okay, it's a little confusing because it's red to speak, not different. I'm Mary Brown from Cisco. Thanks for having me. Cisco is a networking company. One of the things we have to do is figure out what's going on inside our customer networks, inside our service provider customer networks from a traffic perspective. So we know how to build the equipment that's going to serve them. We have to be looking way ahead of where they are today. So starting in 2009, we released something we call the Visual Networking Index for Global Mobile. This is a look at what's going on inside of mobile service provider networks. And I'm happy to say that's probably one of the most widely cited data sets in the industry today. We've been doing it every February since 2009. So one of my theses during these remarks is really going to be that what we're seeing with traffic data and the huge really seeing a pivot point here between existing networks, technology, and spectrum, moving to new all IP-based mobile networks and spectrum. And we're in this very uncomfortable pivot point where consumer demand is rising very quickly and our spectrum supply is not yet caught up. So what is actually happening? Well, first, Cisco has found that U.S. mobile data traffic is taking off. It's growing 16-fold between 2011 and 2016. That's a huge increase. Why is that happening? Well, Tim touched on one of the reasons why, which is we've got these fabulous, powerful, wonderful toys in our hands, and we want to use them, right? We want to watch video. We want to communicate on Facebook. We want to do things on the Internet. And so these powerful devices are causing demand. But the story is actually even more nuanced than that. In addition to just more powerful devices, average users are going to be using this stuff more. Just to give you an example, in 2011, we found the average user was using 324 megabits a month of data on mobile networks from mobile devices. By 2016, that's going to grow to 4.2 gigabits. 74% of the users in the U.S. are going to be using more than a gigabit of data. That's a huge increase in a very short time. And there's going to be many more mobile connections. We're projecting by 2016, 726 million connections. There's only going to be 348 million people, right? So that means a lot of machine-to-machine is going to be added into the mix for the first time now that we're on IP. And, of course, we're going to have faster networks because many of the carriers are, in fact, rolling out LTE networks. So we see this. We see the data plans as simply a symptom of this pivot in the industry and the need to find a way to get more spectrum into the mix to help address it. One of the questions I always get is, well, gee, can you smart technology people in Silicon Valley fix this spectrum crunch? And the answer is, well, it's going to take a combination of things. It's going to take a combination of better technologies, more efficient use of spectrum, but we cannot get away from the fact that we need more spectrum. And I think I even saw a quote from the FCC to that respect in the New York Times sometime in the last 2 weeks. So I'm going to stop there, and we'll move on.
That's great, Ray. I know there's a lot of data. It's hard to get it in 3 minutes. So Ray, is this the spectrum issue, Roger?
Services, why they're using it, what are their attitudes, and how can we provide this affordably to consumers for more widespread adoption while everybody else in the value chain can make a living off it. And what we see is, you know, as Mary mentioned, usage is exploding. The other thing that we don't hear as much is the cost per text message per minute is actually going down. When we read the newspaper, we read this morning like $10,000 phone bill. You know, just not aberrations and wild stories. When we see exactly that the average phone bill has decreased over the last year from about $47.24 to $47.24. Some inputs with new inputs, so we replaced human power.
important things for a country to succeed is to have sufficient bandwidth and a psychology of abundance of bandwidth to drive economic growth. So the context for this discussion, and in fact, I would argue in the next 4 years, the next FCC will have to address this because if you look at a lot of international trends, we're not doing well. The context ought to be, how does the country have a strategic bandwidth advantage? That's not either for or against regulation. In fact, that is very complicated, but the point is what we need to have is a psychology of abundance of bandwidth for innovation. And let me illustrate it with a tactical point. Recently, there was a wonderful meeting with the chairman of the FCC and the head of the Department of the Secretary of Education talking about digital textbooks, something we wrote about in the broadband plan, something that's very exciting, something America ought to lead in, something that can really improve education. But here's the problem. They didn't talk about two barriers to having digital education. One is, of course, state textbook adoption boards, all of which ought to be eliminated. Again, not the subject of this panel. But it would have been nice if they discussed that. The other thing is bandwidth caps. They're not going to, if you have bandwidth caps, I can tell you right now, it is very unlikely that digital textbooks will work in this country, or alternatively, we will create a new kind of digital divide. For digital textbooks to be all that they can be, you're going to do a lot of two-way communication, a lot of video, you're going to blow through these caps easily. And so in the broadband plan, something that was not terribly noticed, but we thought was important, we noted that we expressed no opinion on usage-based caps pricing, but thought that it was certainly a possibility it might come, but that national purposes ought to be exempted for, that there ought to be an inquiry, I should say, as to whether technically you can exempt those uses, and also what the economics of it are. In other words, you don't want the Good Samaritan who is sending a video of an accident to the cops and to 911 and to the TSAP to be charged for doing that. You know, you don't want the next generation of 911 where if you are you need an ambulance, you want to send your whole medical record, you don't want to be charged for that. There are a lot of healthcare uses, education uses, public safety uses, and frankly, democracy uses that you don't want subject to those caps. There are a lot of issues in that, which is why we talked about an inquiry. But the point is, we have to have that's an example of how we need to have a psychology of abundance, particularly in certain areas.
Great, moving on that. Look, Michael, Larry.
In addition to being the CDF News and supporting on also with connectsafely.org, which is the Internet Safety Organization, and I speak a lot to consumers, and the consumers that I talk to, first of all, they are being encouraged to cut the cord. And as people know, a very large number, a growing number of households don't have landlines. And a lot of households that young people live in don't have cable or satellite television either. So, for example, I have two children. Neither one of them has any wires, as far as I know, coming into their homes other than the electrical wires. And I'm not sure they're going to need that soon. So they're relying more and more on broadband, or on wireless broadband, I should say, for just about all of their digital connections, certainly for their conversations, certainly for their messaging, but also for their entertainment and educational resources. Just yesterday, MIT and Harvard announced that they're going to be offering free online courses, which is a tremendous opportunity for millions of people to get a world-class education without having to pay or attend or be admitted to institutions like Harvard and MIT. You can't turn on the television without seeing some kind of a referral to go to our website. You're watching a network broadcast show, and they say, go to abcnews.com or cbs.com to watch back episodes. And so we have industry really pushing us towards broadband, and then we have Apple and all the Android players selling us better, faster devices with larger screens and with faster connections. The LTE iPhone, iPad, third generation is simply the tip of the iceberg. So consumers are being pushed in the direction of more and more consumption. Much of the traditional wired consumption is being offloaded to wireless. Yet at the same time, we're being told that we have to limit our consumption. My daughter is among many people who are very confused, even her unlimited plan, because she, even though she's on her early 20s, she too is a grandfather. She graphics or made sustaining video. And even with, I think, their best and sincere efforts to explain it, it was still daunting and confusing. And I really think that we have a generation of people who essentially have this device in their hand, which is like a credit card that they don't have any control over. It just charges are just coming, and they have no concept of what it is they're spending and how much they're paying for it and what kind of bill they're going to get at the end of the month. Right now, because of the fact that most of us, I guess, are using sub-gigabytes amount of data, it's sub-crisis, it's pre-crisis. But as more and more people start using mobile broadband for all of their entertainment needs, and indeed there are some households I know, and Kim, you're one of them, right, where your only connection to broadband is your wireless device, then that's going to affect our ability to consume. At the same time, corporations are trying to encourage us to consume more. So somehow, somewhere, we have to figure out this discrepancy. So.
Sure, thanks. Just let me make three quick points that I think are important for thinking about this issue. The first is that in industries with high fixed costs, prices are never going to be just about marginal cost. You can't set the price equal to marginal cost or come out of business. So if you focus on just whether caps are relevant to congestion or whether you're paying for that, how much it costs to send your text message, that's never going to get you to the answer. Prices are always, one way or another, going to be above marginal cost. And so that's the first point. The second is that competition is crucial. And then as long as we have multiple networks offering different types of plans, right now we have some that are unlimited, some that aren't. In points we have pay-as-you-go, we have unlimited, we have buckets of minutes, and so on. Then, you know, it's hard to think of good reasons to worry. And it becomes just another way that carriers might differentiate themselves. You might prefer to have a better network with a lower cap, or you might prefer to have unlimited with not quite as good a network, and so on. But that is why the competition is related to the third point, which is that this market, both in terms of demand, with more and more smartphones and iPads and so on, and supply transitioning from 3G to 4G technologies, is changing really quickly. And we have no idea what an equilibrium price set of prices is going to look like yet. And we should be really careful about setting up rules that might affect entry. You wouldn't want to say, tell Metro PCS that it's not allowed to offer a particular type of plan because it's not as good as Verizon's plan. Metro PCS will probably never be able to compete with Verizon, right? So, you know, would you want to tell them that they can't, you know, have a very specialized or tailored plan? Some people would obviously say yes because they tried to tell them that. If you try to ever offer only unlimited service, then only the incumbents will, the biggest incumbents will ever be able to compete. So we need to be very careful about what policy does at this, you know, as we are moving towards what will be the kind of vote. Michael.
So I agree with a lot of what's been said here already, but I do want to point out one thing. A week or two ago, we had a white paper called Know Your Limit. It was designed to be a fairly deep dive thinking about all sorts of usage-based pricing. And it was interpreted by some quarters, I think probably before they read it, as an attack from public knowledge on the idea of usage-based pricing. And as time has gone on and more people have read it, we've gotten feedback that people recognize it was not an attack on usage-based pricing. Usage-based pricing is a tool. And like any tool, it can be used for good or for bad. One of the problems is that usage-based pricing imposes costs on society in a way that can be problematic, that can be anti-competitive, that can get rid of the psychology of abundance, that can reduce new entrants, all sorts of things. And so one of the really critical things when you think about usage-based pricing, and especially data caps, is to begin to understand them and make sure that they aren't living in a black box. We've been trying to say, look, we don't know enough about data caps as an organization, public to know whether they are good or bad, whether they are reasonable or unreasonable. We've been trying to get some simple information about it. It's been very hard and it's been very troubling. All we've been trying to figure out is how are the caps set? What goal are they trying to achieve? And how did you arrive at 2 gigabytes or 4 or 6 or whatever it is? And once they're set, how are they evaluated against those goals? And going forward, what would cause them to change? And so far, we've been unable to get even those basic answers from some of the carriers and some of the ISPs. And so it really, it stops the discussion in its tracks, because if you don't even
thank you. And before I go, I want to get to Mary's point about spectrum and some of those issues that was kind of highlighted by Scott as well. But before we do that, I want to spend a little more time in my intro. I mentioned that the premise of this panel isn't necessarily that these things are particularly bad, or that they're, Kindle, as introduced, I think was really interesting in the sense that people were able to buy, data as they bought their device and unlimited books. Go with these other dynamic plans out there. GigaOM wrote an article yesterday suggesting that Apple could actually have leverage to buy wholesale, wireless by different carriers across their and sell a device that had data bundled into it. Suggesting that, as Apple did with the first iPhone and AT&T, they just have a lot more leverage than we give them credit for. And that we may be moving toward a more wholesale data plan pricing. And so I guess the question is, Roger, you do a lot of research. Larry, you're a technology writer. Let's look at the positive sides of the dynamic pricing, right?
Yeah, when we look at dynamic pricing, when we look at unlimited plans and fixed price plans, they are the one size fits it all. And when we look at fashion, we know instinctively that that is a really bad idea. Because for most of the people, it doesn't fit. So usage pricing actually makes it possible that late users are paying a lot less than they would under a one size fits all plan. And that the small minority of people that are really heavy users are paying their appropriate share. When we look at actual usage and compare it to the price plans and to the buckets that the carriers have set, we clearly see that only 95% plus, only the top 95% of users are going to be over the bucket. So it's a very small but very vocal minority that are really into their device, really passionate about it, and when it doesn't work the way they want it to work, they let you know, and they take over the web and talk about it. What people don't talk about it is, when the average consumer is using, 300 to 500 megabytes a month, and there's a lot of people who use even less. Those are the people who are actually getting taken advantage of by unlimited plans because they are the ones who are subsidizing everybody else. So usage-based pricing really allows the appropriate price point to be levied to actual usage.
And Larry, you live out in Silicon Valley. You're a big user of Facebook. What if next month is looking for rumors are true, or a couple months from now, Facebook introduces the Facebook phone and says, it's $20 a month, do whatever you want on Facebook, and that's pretty much all you
well, want. In fact, in Kenya, there already is. If you're Kenyan, where you pay dearly relative to your income for data, you can access Facebook for free. In Kenya, I'm not sure, has a network neutrality regime. Blair probably knows more about this than I do, but the issue is you could offer, and as you mentioned, AT&T apparently is looking at doing deals where they would do what they call the 800 number of broadband, where instead of the user paying for the call or for the connection to Facebook or Twitter or Netflix or whatever it is, the provider, the Netflix or the Facebook people would pay for it, which on the surface of it does seem very consumer friendly, but then you start getting very scared about the whole network neutrality issue, where suddenly I'm getting Netflix for free because the carrier and Netflix have a deal together, but I have to pay for Hulu or whatever the deal is.
I'm old enough to remember that. I used to love 1-800 numbers.
Well, 1-800 numbers had their advantage, but we didn't have that network neutrality. Well, we did have some level of neutrality on phone calls. But anyway, the bottom line is there's going to be all sorts of creative ways to make data available, but the bottom line is that this notion, I agree that perhaps on average, Americans only use half a gigabyte a month and perhaps less. But I also know that there are people, and they're not the data hogs, they're not the people who are up there, on Bitcoin and uploading constantly, just normal users like my daughter, who's not that techie, who just likes to watch Hulu when she goes to the gym, that she's going, she is using, apparently she's one of the 5%, and she's not somebody who's hogging information. She just wants to watch some video on her phone.
Well, and video is the number one data consumption tool. If we could not have video, we would not have that spectrum crunch that we're having. It's just the most dominant and bandwidth intensive application out there. More than 60% of all the traffic on wireless networks is video. So she is using her cell phone like she's using her television set.
At the point she can't even purchase an audio kit. She happens to be the grandfather into a theoretical audio kit. But that's not even available except on Sprint from the major networks.
So what happens to Sprint phone? So within a beneficial pricing scheme, would have the fixed cost be covered over as large number of people as possible. What that means in any industry is that the heaviest users, the people with the highest demand, will pay the most, regardless of whether they're causing congestion on the network or not. Your daughter is a very heavy user. She should pay more. Don't ask everyone else to subsidize her use. Like the point is, if anyone wants to say that there's a company right now that buys on it, so as long as that's the case, it's not even clear that there's a problem here, right?
This is a really good demonstration. We talk about, only 5% of users have a problem with this. And so when you say that as a general statement, you think, these are these super tiny people doing really weird internet stuff. It doesn't even make sense to the rest of us. But the reality is the top 5% of users are people who represent what everyone is going to be doing in 2 or 3 or 4 years. You look at these numbers, these are the numbers we were speaking at before. This is what people are doing, and it's not doing crazy internet stuff they don't understand. It's, hey, I'm at the gym, and I don't want to watch whatever is on the TV in the gym. I've got this great device, and I want to use it. So the idea that we're going to create a pricing scheme now that works for, that nominally works for 95% of the users today, and then just assume that that is going to work from here on forward, either it does work or it doesn't work. If it does work, it's because we've frozen innovation in today's terms and have stopped people from doing new and interesting things. It doesn't work because people want to do those things so badly they're running up against the cap. Neither of those are particularly good outcomes if you don't structure the system intelligently.
No, you're assuming that people's use is going to continue to grow, which I believe is a true assumption, but that these plans won't change. And so why should plans be structured today to benefit what the majority of people will do 5 years from now?
This is the question that we've been raising. We haven't seen these caps move very quickly or respond to very much information to what market conditions are doing. People are using more data now.
Well, you have seen AT&T adjust their price, their buckets from 2 to 3. Basically, they increased them by 50% about 2 years after the introduction. You de facto have seen Verizon do the same thing. Yes, they have the 2 megabyte plan, and for the last 5 months, the community doubled the data. So that promotion is actually their standard offer. So by default, all of these price plans have been increasing by 50 to 100% because, the wireless carriers don't have a malicious joy of pissing people off by sending in
here at the very start of this very dynamic change in the market. Is there a isn't going to have to be modified over time. I mean, Blair raised some very important issues about public safety. These issues are going to have to be dealt with over time, but we're at the very beginning here, and we have to respect the fact we're dealing with a highly dynamic market.
Is that right? I think that it's not a 5% problem or a 10% problem. I just think the analysis of looking at it that way is wrong. In fact, I'm very sympathetic to Scott's third point. Having been through the cable pricing of the Cable Act of 92 when I was at the FCC the first time, I'm really nervous about any government attempt to get into how you package things, how you price things, all that. But what I think we're confusing is what's the role of business and what's the role of policy. Business should have to figure out how to get a return on their investment. That's what they should do. It's very legitimate, and that's exactly right. You can't expect that high CapEx industry to price on a marginal cost basis. Okay. But what's the role of government? Well, there's a couple of different ones, and I think we're missing the point. One is to make sure that there are sufficient inputs to have a psychology of abundance, which is why I was the first government official at the time to ever utter the words looming spectrum crunch. And that was for a very important reason. I think it was important to understand that the biggest risk to the broadband ecosystem from a 10-year perspective, looking at that time was 2009, was a lack of spectrum. That still exists, though I would say that what we've learned, and I would hope one New York Times columnist wrote the other day about how governments never seem to learn, but what we've learned over the last couple of years is the path of reclamation of spectrum is very difficult, so we may have to find, address the looming spectrum question in different ways, more sharing technologies. But the point is, that has to be at the core of the debate, not how do we articulate how the company should do their business, but rather how do we make sure we're appropriately using inputs. But the second thing is we have to understand what the public goods are. The first one is economic growth. And how do we have a policy that drives economic growth through innovation, through the replacement of traditional goods and services with bandwidth services, which we want to have happen, we want to lead the world in. The second, how do we deliver essential public goods and services? And that's where the right, that's where the debate ought to be.
I want to pick up on Michael's point about the future. I think the future is going to get here a lot faster than we think. When you look at the amount in which data is being pushed to us by the apps that we're downloading, by the entertainment, by the educational process, by the movement towards telemedicine, I really think that it's going to get to a point where the majority of users are pushing up against those 2 to 3 gigabyte limits. And whether it's this year or next year or 5 years from now, I'm not sure. But somehow we have to figure out a way, and I don't know what the pricing model ought to be, but we have to figure out a way where people are able to get this data, are able to get it in a way that's affordable, and most importantly, are able to get it in a way that's not going to get them sticker shock. So suddenly they have this surprise bill at the end of the month that they had never anticipated. There has to be some way. If I get in my car and I decide to drive, at least I kind of know how many miles per gallon I get and how much I pay for gasoline. I have some notion what this cost, what trip is going to cost me. And I have a feeling that people who are using broadband today, it's an absolute black box.
What I hear folks saying is that as we set this up, that there's going to be dynamic pricing going forward. This is just the beginning. I'm glad that Mary agrees with that premise. It's just the beginning of this. Michael, it seems to be saying, but look at it in the current context of the pricing plans that we have, like 5 gigs or whatever, and let's look at that problem for a moment. Roger was saying that, and I was saying earlier, that maybe the carriers don't have as much leverage as we think they do. You were saying don't maliciously piss off your customer. And I was saying, Apple seems to have a fair amount of clout in the marketplace as well. But looking at the current pricing suite, if we can just look at the here and now, and again, knowing that the future is going to get much more dynamic, are these current pricing models sufficient to address the problem of the spectrum crunch or the like in congestion? The way they're doing it right now, tailored to kind of alleviate congestion and spectrum?
Well, if we take one step back, carriers actually like unlimited pricing plans because it's really easy to sell. Because you can just say, here, use it, don't worry about it. And it's really easy to build because it's one price. You don't have to count anything. Usage prices are actually an implicit admission by the carriers that they can't predict the usage pattern. Because, for example, if you're using what is to the consumer an unlimited voice plan, it's actually to a wireless carrier about
compression and drop balls and low data speeds are actually a result of their inability to forecast what is actual demand. So, and the reaction to it was usage-based pricing. And the usage-based pricing is a temporary situation until we figure out what is ultimately
the build compression would look at your venture, but right now is usage-based pricing or 5-day caps, is that an appropriate way to deal with the problem that we think we have?
It's just the best tool that is available, and it's doing a reasonably good job.
So the idea is that you know you have a 5-gig limit, which I do on my Wi-Fi, and that I kind of have that in the back of my head. I'm not really sure how many megabytes I'm using, but it kind of tempers how I use it. I kind of have it in the back of my mind, and I'm trying to make sure I limit my bandwidth uses, and that's where we are right now.
It is the best tool we have, so it has helped to a large extent, and the adjustments show that they're monitoring how usage and congestions and capital investment stays in hand, and how they have to provision all these services. So once they figure out, once we have reached this terminal level, we will see unlimited pricing come back, and that will be good enough for now. Good enough for now.
But let's take a minute and examine what you just said, right? So we compare usage-based pricing to a traditional way of price discrimination on networks, which is by speed. Right now you said, okay, I have this cap. I don't really know what 5 gigabyte cap means. I don't know what it means in any given day for any activity. So I kind of go do some things that I wish I could do and hope that I stay under the cap, right? This is a really inefficient way to have you regulate your use. There's almost no feedback loop for you while you're doing
well. You know, and the way I said it, I wasn't being cheeky, I guess.
You have every carrier has by now applications on the smartphone.
Yeah,
if you just want to
tell me.
It tells you how much.
Speed is something that if I want to do, say, I want to do something and I'm worried about my connection, my connection is too slow to handle it. That's an immediate feedback that everyone understands. I have to open another app, I have to look at a gate, I have to look at a gauge and calculate what that means for the rest of the month and what else I have to do. It's a signal to consumers that people understand immediately. With the monthly data caps, it strikes me as an incredibly inefficient way to signal the customers they need to pay more or do less.
So it's like a fuel gauge in your car and you refuse to look at the fuel gauge.
Issues that we really want to promote, that we don't want to chill because of some kind of data plan or some kind of thing. Like if you have a mobile phone, and I think some criminals bought this up, you have a mobile phone with no plan whatsoever. Like it doesn't have no plan whatsoever. But if you dial 911, it connects to dial 911. Somebody did a butt dial. They were committing a crime and they had their phone bricked. They didn't actually call 911. And they didn't realize it. And thinking about it as we're going forward in the future, that you would carve out
some documents filed with us which indicated there are a number of different technological approaches, but we really couldn't get into making a recommendation at that time. I think it would be wise for the commission to start a proceeding just to look at it, but not with the sense that it necessarily goes to conclusion, because it could be that the plan's adjusted in a way that it probably really doesn't matter. But I think we should at least explore it, and I would note that for all of the folks here who are representing members of Congress, you have a 18th century version of this, since the post office is long exempted mail coming through from members of Congress for any public policy reason. And it's whether it be 911, what we do with phones today, or that, that's kind of the analogy.
So we should have a Facebook Frank, is that what you're saying?
Something like that. Well, actually, probably not Facebook, but I do think that in the cases of healthcare, education, public safety, and democracy, we ought to at least explore the possibility. But again, it depends on what the record shows in terms of both the technological path and the economics.
Mary?
Yeah, I would say, with respect to the public safety issues, sadly, this is not a pressing policy matter. Given where we are with the nation's 911 system, we are stuck firmly in the mid-20th century on voice technology, and you cannot send a video, much less a text message, to most 911 centers today, and that's not going to change anytime soon. As sad as that fact is, it will change, I believe, in the long run. So we have a lot of time to debate this. On the education front, I think, you know, it's still early days. I mean, one of the things we haven't talked about on the panel yet is how consumers and carriers, for that matter, are using Wi-Fi offloading to try to get around these data cap issues. I mean, in schools and in homes, the way you would download a book, or at least the way I download my books when I want to read them on my tablet, is on a Wi-Fi connection to a wired broadband network, and then I don't pay anything on my data cap. That might not help Tim. Apparently, he doesn't have a wired broadband connection, but he is in a very small minority of households today that's getting mobile-only broadband. The majority of people do have either a DSL, fiber, cable modem, or satellite modem broadband connection, so they can utilize that Wi-Fi offloading capacity.
And as I've said, you know, the fact that I only have a wireless connection, I'm not tempted to download salacious videos, which really helps my mortal soul. So,
if I can make one observation,
yes.
Actually, all wireline broadband internet providers have a data cap on it. It's just very high, but there is a cap on it.
One question.
Is reasonable mechanism for carriers to use. Should there be a role still, though, for government to make sure that it's not used in an anti-competitive way outside of just pricing their services? There was an article in Digo with the other day about Sony holding back on an online TV programming offering because of uncertainty about Comcast data caps. So I present this to questions everybody on the panel.
Absolutely. This is obviously a wireless panel, but on the wireless side, there is a clear conflict between a company that
make sense. The question is how it affects consumers, and then whether there are anti-competitive, whether there are anti-competitive price discrimination issues.
Can I ask a follow-up on changing it? Can I ask a follow-up question about what we're asking these companies to provide? I've become addicted to somebody putting out frozen yogurt shop in the basement of a compliment building, which is really bad. So I'm there every day. It's frozen, it's High Street. And I go in there and I pour way too much frozen yogurt into my cup. And I try to limit it, but I always like fill it up. And then I put it on a scale, and that's how I pay for it. That's the pricing structure. And on the scale is a little tag, and it says it's proof of weights and measures by the District of Columbia, I think. And it, like, they check it every, I don't know how many months, and they have like a punch thing that they've checked it. If we measure frozen yogurt, we measure deli meats. We measure a lot of stuff. What we measure, is there a role for disclosure and measuring of data by the Federal Trade Commission or whoever does it, NIST, or the, I don't know who does it?
So I think the FCC has been trying to do some of that with their Sam Knows project. For the purposes of this audience, we can say that measuring data on networks is very complicated. There's many moving parts, and you can't always be sure if what you're looking at and to whom one does one attribute a slowdown in speeds. But I think the FCC has already been trying to look at that and trying to get the data out to consumers about what the real speeds are.
And just for the record, if there was a frozen yogurt cap, a monthly cap, that would limit the amount of aid, I'd really appreciate it. So, Aaron, in the back, one question.
So it's certainly a fantastic floor. I don't want to suggest that there's no role for DOJ, but history has suggested, especially in recent years, that current antitrust jurisprudence is not necessarily well matched to some of the competitive problems that you see in the communication space. And so, well, of course, there are one of the most famous antitrust cases is a communications case, so I'm not going to say that there's no role for it. It doesn't seem to be able to deal with the nuance of some of the problems here. But again,
you said that based on what?
I'm sorry.
You said that based on what? What evidence is that they're not capable of dealing with some of these nuances?
Well, I'd say there's been a lot of problematic actions in that communication space in the last 10 years with consolidation with some of the pricing structure.
And I see it all.
Set up, okay, I use 300 messages a month, and I'm only paying for 500 message bucket, and
said, when the 500 or when the 300 message plan went away, or the 500 message plan went away, nobody went around and said, oh, by the way, you have to get out 1,000 message plan. Your grandfather into the old plan.
Well, you should obviously be a carrier for the rest. So you might also be in favor of the messaging plans of 25 cents a message, right? Because that allows you to exactly the whole card. You know, being a watch, you can have said that there's a lot of things I don't understand about this stuff. For example, I'm not able to read a congressional bill. It's impossible to me. And I think the same thing is true for a lot of people about reading their phone bill. And so when I listen to this discussion, and I don't know what the solution is, I don't know what the policy should be. I mean, that's where the smart people are concerned to figure out. But I do know that the general public is totally oblivious and doesn't really have a clue as to what's going on here. And so you've got all of these companies selling these wonderful devices like this iPad sitting here and saying, look at the wonderful things you can do. And by the way, we just put in an LTE, a cellular connection. There's a way you can download data 10 times as fast. But if you do it, you're actually going to go through your data plan within hours, if not minutes. And so there's a huge disconnect between the promises and the reality. And so the mere fact that Tim has to meter his data usage, and I have to, we all have to meter our data usage, and I don't, because I happen to have one carrier that's struggling. It may not stay in business. It does allow for unlimited data.
For a reason.
Well, there's a lot of reasons. By the way, it's slow, and there are advantages to AT&T and Verizon. But the bottom line is that from a broader perspective, if we're going to move forward into a digital society to the point where this becomes the ticket to Americans' financial revival, where this becomes the ticket to people's educational opportunities, where this becomes a ticket to Hollywood's fortunes and being able to provide entertainment in ways that people can consume on the go wherever they are, then this is a problem that has to be solved. And my guess is that lies in the Ciscos and the FCCs of the world to figure out a way around the broadband crunch. And that's not easy. I know that's a huge challenge. But the bottom line is that consumers are confused. It's totally transparent. And they're being sold something, and then they're being told after they buy it, and oh, by the way, you can't afford to use it. A little bit like a Hummer.
We talked a lot about consumers appropriately, I think, because this is a ubiquitous concern about consumers. Is everybody's, you know, all the people have mobile phones, they're concerned about their data usage. We talked a lot about the carriers. I ask the panels also ponder what the impact of data plans and dynamic data plans, you know, good and the bad, have on innovation. And, you know, like we can talk about, you know, network innovation, obviously, and we talked a bit about that. Or what about the kind of edge innovation, the apps, and things like that?
I thought that their technology piece was very interesting and, as Michael suggested, much more nuanced than people thought of it. But I did think that they missed a little bit of history. They actually accurately point out that a lot of internet usage was driven by AOL's decision to go to all-you-can-eat, and then that was driven by AT&T's decision to do the same, and that was true, but it was also driven by the FCC decision to retain the exemption, which meant that terminating access charges couldn't be applied. And so it was actually economically viable for those companies to do all you can eat. And I would note Europe didn't do that, and therefore there's actually some really interesting evidence about Americans being the most innovative consumers. But part of the reason we're the most innovative consumers is because we had all you can eat packages. And so that actually was a policy that worked extremely well for the country. Secondly, on the wireless, they have a wonderful chart which shows that when AT&T did the one rate plan, usage went up amazingly, which I think has led to America really leading in wireless devices and applications and all kinds of other things, as well as, by the way, networks, which is important. But what they missed in the history was the importance of the auctions of 95 in terms of 94-95 in terms of generating more competition. But the other thing they missed, and by the way, almost everyone missed this except for Reed Hundt, to his credit, dropping the wireless to wire terminating access charges. So the wireless usage prior to that was like when I was in college flying my folks cross country, you'd line up at 501 in the hallway in the dorm and say, hi, we got to talk for a minute, blah, blah, blah. In the early days of wireless phones, which were $1,200 a month, hi, I'm calling from wireless phone, I'll just do this very quick. What changed in the psychology was really important. And so there are
focus on staff?
That's actually that's a really great idea. That would require a budget increase. I don't think that's forthcoming.
Maybe I see what's there. So I actually want to drill down a little bit more on Tim's question about innovation with apps and content. I mean, might these, we can debate the merits of the dynamic apps, but might that spur greater advancements in compression and caching technologies to lessen the loads that are being delivered over the internet or over the wireless devices? I bring the point up in the whole Comcast bit, or I don't want to relive that, but one of the things that was a byproduct was the formation of that P4P group, which got carriers and, you know, internet applications, BitTorrent, P2P application developers in the same room trying to optimize the delivery of that content. So is there a silver lining here?
Yes, absolutely. Whenever there's a scarcity of a resource, very clever minds get to work on fixing that. And when we, it was one of the things we don't realize, why did devices, iPhone and Android devices, why are they so cool? Because they are essentially computers put in the palm of your hand, designed by people that lived from an unlimited bandwidth world or close to it from a wireless perspective. So they are extremely chatty. And only recently did some of the device manufacturers, step up to the plate. I think one of the reasons, you read the statistics of this device uses more data, or this platform uses more data than the other. For example, right now, Android devices are using more data than Apple devices, and it's touted as a success for Android because people love it more and use it more. But the unsung hero story is that Apple actually put a tremendous effort in optimizing the way the iPhone communicates with the network, has made it substantially more efficient. And one of the wonderful things about, BlackBerry gets such a bad rap these days, but one of the things that really made was their early claim to fame was how efficient it used the network, because when they grew up, the network was extremely efficient. So the data caps hopefully are, and I know are, leading both device manufacturers and application providers to use Spectrum more efficiently.
I think your point is exactly right, except that I think it ignores the larger story of innovation. Read Mark Andreessen's description of how he innovated with Mosaic, as I said, in Wired Magazine. And he talks about having unlimited computing power. Read Outliers, where Bill Gates and Paul Allen had unlimited computing power as students in junior high school. The reason why all of the foundation blocks of the internet actually come out of the universities is because they have much higher speed networks. So while your point is right, I would say it's much, and undoubtedly people work on that, but I'd rather be the country that invented fantastic applications that everybody in the world wants to use than the country that only invented data compression technology.
Another question?
Conference.
made me think about if you know, Michael is saying that there's a looming problem, there's a really big problem here. Wouldn't you think that more industries, whether it be app developers or device manufacturers or other people getting up in arms about this on the impact of innovation? One question that came to mind because of the first panel today was advertising. If you're paying by the megabyte, and bundled with those downloads are advertising. So you're paying not only for the content that you're receiving, but you're also paying for the advertising that goes along with it, which arguably enables this cornucopia of services and apps. Are people going to start saying, hey, I don't want to be downloading the advertising along with my content, and there'll be ad blockers and things like that. There'll be a real tension between the advertising industry, the app manufacturers, and the data plans. And won't we see, why aren't we seeing that yet?
I think that's a good point. And someday we might, that will be something that pushes carriers to changing how they view caps. But I think part of the answer is what Roger said initially, which is that the things that are sucking up bandwidth is video.
Right.
And that's pretty much it. The other apps that we use, Twitter, those are very light bandwidth. Even, Pandora streaming music is like 64 kbps. It's K, not M. So I think right now it's mostly video, and the other things aren't having the same kind of effect, but it's certainly possible. I think Scott's right. I think that is a huge part of it. And another part of it is that, as Blair's been saying, a lot of the technologies and the apps they're going to need fat pipes don't exist yet. So the companies aren't complaining because they aren't companies yet. And companies that see a future where they might have problems with data, like Facebook, is probably doing some sort of cat, I don't know, but they're probably doing a cat first and saying, okay, we're big enough that if we get to that place, maybe we can cut a deal with AT&T and Verizon or somebody and find a way that to deal with this for us. But it's one of the hardest things with any of this stuff is that the impact is going to be on the technology that doesn't exist yet, on the company that doesn't exist yet, and having the confidence to protect that company even when you don't know what it is a very hard thing to do in the here and now, but it's also a very valuable thing.
Right, well, so the last question I would ask you is, since we are on Capitol Hill here, and this is the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee, what is the role of government? We've touched on that. Blair talked about transparency and antitrust. We've had some discussions about metering. I mentioned that the city government measures by frozen yogurt consumption, and it accounts for that. This morning we had Patty Kloss, who's the head of the Mobile Technology Unit at the Federal Trade Commission, and I wouldn't have guessed 5 years ago that the Federal Trade Commission would ever have a mobile technology bureau. So I guess maybe I might ask everybody going from Mary all the way down is, is there an appropriate role for government now and maybe in the future?
The most appropriate role for government right now is to continue to focus on spectrum availability, which we 2 years from Blair's plan, we've made significant progress with the bill that passed in February, but a lot of work remains to be done. We are at the beginning of the mobile broadband era, and we simply have to have the spectrum available to fit the LTE networks of tomorrow. So we've got to continue down the road of looking at spectrum availability, both on the mobile license side as well as on the unlicensed Wi-Fi side, to make sure we're putting spectrum in the supply chain. Otherwise, the data plan situation just gets worse over time. So I would say that's the most immediate need. In addition, I think to the topics that you mentioned, Tim.
I agree with everything on spectrum, and I do think that there's a paradigm shift that we're going to have to go through to make sure that more of the offloading and sharing is feasible, because that's going to really be the only way to get to where we need to go. The second thing is the point that I made earlier is that the government want to, as it thinks about social policy and certain what we refer to in the plan as national purposes, we ought to just look at the question, open up the question of what is the impact of this on that.
Spectrum things narrow the field, so I can't comment on the spectrum part. But I think the role of government right now is
that the government could play a role in carving out unlimited access to essential services, whether that's medical, educational, products like FedNet and C-SPAN and other kinds of downloads that we publicly deem as something that is in the public interest.
Like I said, I think the Department of Justice has an important role to play. I think sometimes people say that it should be left to antitrust issues because they see that as a convenient way to say to believe that the government shouldn't really be doing much at all. I don't believe that. I think the Department of Justice really does play an important role, and they should investigate when they think things are anti-competitive. The second is the spectrum issue, and bringing more spectrum into the market. The FCC has to be careful, I guess, not to make sure that it doesn't take more spectrum away from the market. So, back to the light spread issue. So, we just decided that basically, I think 15 billion megahertz pops are off the table for broadband. That can't be used because the GPS industry complained. They've got to be careful about that. That's, the snap of a finger is that much spectrum gone. I think they've got to be careful to not make that kind of mistake.
What we could use from Congress would be policies that help foster innovation and investment in innovation rather than create barriers. Obviously, we need more spectrum, but I think what ultimately would be extremely helpful would be a rewrite of the Telecom Act. It's the Telecom Act of 1996 and 2012.
I really want to thank that this panel was very gracious. We had a lot of folks up there, a lot of different perspectives, a really good discussion.